Hi, I'm Drew Pressler, AVP with Advisory Services. Welcome to the HealthTrust Candid Conversations podcast. This is a podcast where we highlight physicians, clinicians, and subject matter experts who are innovating, caring for those in need, and working to improve human life. Today, we're discussing patient blood management and various aspects of a well-rounded program. Becky O'Neill and Kara Fortune, who are subject matter experts from our advisory services team, join me in explaining the various aspects of the program. We cover components of a patient blood management program from a lab and pharmacy perspective, the difference between blood utilization and blood management, unique challenges hospitals are facing with relation to blood management, and how the essence of a good program means putting patients first. I hope you enjoy the conversation. I'm here with Kara Fortune and Becky O'Neill, and we're going to have a conversation today about patient blood management. And I want to start off just by level setting. You hear different terms around blood utilization, blood management, and I want to make sure that we're all speaking the same language. So I'm going to start with Becky. What is a patient blood management program, and how does that differ from just blood utilization?
Thanks, Drew. Actually, a patient blood management program is a patient-centered approach. It's an overarching program, and it maximizes the safety of a necessary blood transfusion and minimizes the need for transfusions through targeted interventions. And some of those interventions are anemia management, which would be correcting an iron deficiency or a B12 folate deficiency before surgery. And it also, an intervention would be perioperative management by use of cell savers, minimizing blood loss, and the use of pharmaceuticals in that space. And the difference between patient blood management and blood utilization is that blood utilization is just one component of the patient blood management program. And it educates physicians on the guidelines for appropriate transfusions. It reviews the local transfusion practices, and it provides feedback on transfusion trends within the organization. And blood utilization is also required as a regulatory requirement from accrediting agencies like Joint Commission and CMS. So every organization should have a blood utilization program, but not everyone has a patient blood management program that incorporates blood conservation, anemia management, optimizing coagulation with a patient-centered approach, and the patient being the center of all those pillars to be considered in every area.
So it sounds like there's a whole lot more to it than just blood utilization, and it really is a pretty robust program. I'm going to go over to Kara from the pharmacy side. There's a lot of clinical terms, a lot of terms that I'm not going to try to repeat or replicate. But just from the pharmacy perspective, what are some of the ways that pharmacy is involved? And can you just give us a little bit more information about those pieces of the program that involve pharmacy?
Sure. And I'll echo what Becky was saying, that the main difference to think about the difference between a patient blood management program and blood utilization is that the program places the emphasis on the patient and not just the product. So that's one just big defining difference between the two. And so when you think about treating a patient holistically, that normally in healthcare involves a multidisciplinary approach where you have, you know, all of the subject matter experts on the team to treat the patient, not just one component of the patient. So that gives better patient outcomes, right? So when we think about how pharmacists can be involved with the program, they're going to be at the table with the physician, with the blood bank members, with lab. And when we look at anemia, I'll just use that as an example. So a lot of folks are familiar with anemia, right? You have multiple medications that can be used to treat anemia depending on the type of anemia that it is. So when a pharmacist is at the table, they can help make sure that weeks before a patient is going to go in for a major elective procedure that we know is associated with significant blood loss, that we can make sure that patient reaches their optimized hemoglobin levels, hematocrit levels, to help decrease the need for a blood transfusion with that procedure. Those could be drugs such as your erythropoietic stimulating agents. Those are products that are going to increase your red blood cell count and your hemoglobin, and also IV iron therapies if it's iron deficiency anemia. So these are just a few examples of how we could prepare the patient and decrease the risk for transfusion with these types of pharmaceutical approaches versus always relying on a blood transfusion.
Yeah, I like what you said about focusing on the patient, not the product, and taking that more holistic approach to it. So Becky, coming back to you, on that patient-centered approach. You know, can you build on that? How does a hospital really keep this program focused on the patient?
Right. And I just want to touch on something that Akira said. For our listeners that may not be clinical, that may be wondering, you know, what does anemia mean? And it's just a condition where there's a lack of healthy red blood cells in the body to carry oxygen to your tissues and organs. So I think everyone's aware mostly what, the definition of anemia. But just for our listeners that may not be clinical, I just wanted to clarify that a little bit.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And as far as a patient-centered approach, the way we want to think about that is putting the patient in the center of the blood management program. And it's an evidence-based approach to improve the patient's outcomes by managing and preserving that patient's own blood. And it promotes patient safety and empowerment. That's a patient-centered approach. And it incorporates the patient's needs and concerns in the decision-making process of whether or not they receive a blood transfusion. So it would also consist of alerting patients to the potential risk benefits. You want to talk about alternatives. If there's a reason, maybe for religious reasons, they would want to decline a blood transfusion. And also working with that patient to come up with the final treatment plan. So when it's not a trauma and the patients can be involved in that decision of whether or not they would, you know, choose to get a blood transfusion, we want them at the center and informed making those decisions on their own.
Great.
With the help of their physicians and caretakers.
And that can be a little intimidating for a patient. So, I'm thinking about if I'm a patient, is that something I can just go in and ask my physician about?
Well, there is a process and it's a requirement, a regulatory requirement called consent, and it's informed consent. And so before a patient receives a blood transfusion, and like I want to differentiate between a trauma where you're not able to make your own decisions and they're doing whatever they can to save your life at that time, you may not be able to be involved in that decision-making process. But if you can be, then informed consent would be the physician would go over the risk, the benefits, the alternatives to make sure you understand the procedure, you understand why you need a blood transfusion or why they're considering that, and then you have an opportunity to make your own decision and be informed. You have to sign the consent to say you agree to receive a blood transfusion, even with the risk involved and because the benefits outweigh, or you can decline, and that requires a signature as well.
Okay. Now that's really good information for our listeners. So if I'm going to summarize the pillars and the components and try to keep it simple for myself, there's one aspect, which is the utilization of the blood and just trying not to use as much. There's the preventative aspect, which you talked about with the anemia management. Mm-hmm. There's a pharmacy aspect where you're reducing the need for it as well during the procedure. And then all through that, the patient is involved. Mm-hmm. in that approach. So is that a good summary? Am I missing anything?
No, I think that covers it as well. We want the patients involved in understanding and being proactive in their own care and making their own decisions. So as far as the anemia management, we would want the physicians to involve the patients early on to understand that they do have anemia, maybe an iron deficiency, and getting that corrected maybe before an elective procedure like a knee replacement or joint replacement, taking that time, maybe postponing that surgery to let the patients correct that condition that would mitigate the risk of them needing a blood transfusion during surgery.
So we've talked about the program, and I think we've got a good baseline for what that program entails. Now I want to shift a little bit and talk about the value and the benefits of the program. And I think of two main perspectives. You've got the value and benefit to the hospital, the organization, and also to the patient. So what are some of the benefits to these two groups?
Well, I think for patients, it improves patient outcomes and by just decreasing inappropriate transfusions. So you don't have the risk of those adverse events that can happen with blood transfusions. And it increases, the safety and quality for the ones that do need transfusions. So we want to reduce the patients that maybe would receive an inappropriate transfusion, but we want to make the ones that do need transfusions, we want to make that safer for them. And it also conserves blood components for the patients that actually need them. And ultimately, it does reduce unnecessary cost for the organization or the hospitals. And hospitals can implement patient blood management programs, and they can achieve significant reductions in the number of transfusions they perform. And that translates into improved patient outcomes, patient satisfaction and safety, but also can achieve up to a 20 to 30% reduction in the cost of transfusion. And that's the total cost. There's not just the cost of the unit of blood itself, or the purchase of that from for the blood bank. It also, there's the administration cost. There's the testing cost for the lab to get that unit ready for the patient. And there's also just the storage cost of having, and blood has to be monitored 24/7 in a temperature controlled environment. So there's a lot of cost associated with transfusions. And when you can reduce that, it's an overall cost reduction for the facility.
Yeah, that's great. That's a good statistic. I want to just say that again. So you said 20 to 30% reduction in your red blood cell unit cost by
yes.
having one of these programs.
Yes. We would expect that for inpatient blood transfusions, that if you implement a patient blood management program, that you could reduce the number of red cell unit transfusions by 20 to 30%. And that translates into whatever cost savings
right.
You determine is for your facility,
right.
What that total cost is.
And that's significant.
And Carrie, do you have anything to add to that?
I would just say, you know, when we talk about the adverse events related to transfusion, as you mentioned, that's important to note that when we think about someone receiving a donor transfusion, right, there's risks associated with that. It can be minor to life-threatening. So these are not just given without any increased risks. When we think about the minor side effects, that's anything from hives, you know, a slight rash, and fever. But then when we think about, you know, all the way to the major transfusion-related reactions, those could be rare, but acute hemolytic transfusion reaction is one that comes to mind, right? And that's, for those that aren't familiar with those terms, that's a reaction caused by the patient's body attacking the transfused red blood cells from the donor when they may not be a match. So that's an inherent risk with getting a blood transfusion. And going back to the informed consent, that's part of the reason why, you know, the physician needs to have that conversation with the patient so they understand if they need it, yes, but if I do receive that, there can be risk involved, anything from minor to life-threatening.
And you jumped right to where I was going to go with the next part of the conversation. We talked about the benefits. What are some of the other challenges for the hospital? You know, the question that comes to mind, I hear some of the statistics that you all have shared. Why wouldn't every hospital have this program in place? So there's got to be some challenges related to it. What are those barriers that really prevent a hospital or a system from having a robust program like this?
That's a great question. And I think a lot of folks know the current state of healthcare. Everyone is looking for savings on, you know, wherever they can grasp them, wherever they can obtain savings. So part of the reason that comes to mind is maybe hospitals are not familiar with the opportunity related to a patient blood management program that they can find. They're doing the regulatory things, right? The blood utilization, but again, that's just the product. That's not the overall patient, and that's not the overall savings that could be provided with this program. So one, I believe, is just education and familiarity with what a patient blood management program is, what it can do for your healthcare system or a facility. Also, institutional organization, you know, leadership structure, you know, who is going to own the program. This is not just a one and done with any program, right? It takes manpower, it takes staff, it takes monitoring, it takes ownership. And so everyone's buckets are full, you know, multiple folks wear multiple hats. It's not, you know, just one job function in a lot of the leadership scenarios. And so this would be another addition to that leadership's plate, right? So another time constraint. And then funding and resource limitations, like the staffing, but also, you know, we have to understand the ROI that's associated with this, because it may require some increased staff. It may require other increased resources. When you do it properly, you know, IT time, if you have algorithms in place, when it's patient-centered, you know, you want it to be as easy for that end user within the healthcare system that's treating the patient to know the right thing to do at the right time. So that's just an example of other things that may not be in place that that it will take an organization in order to get it done.
Yeah, I think, you know, explaining that ROI and helping the leadership understand the end result and the value of the program is critical. And hopefully we're getting that message out there and helping people understand what a program, not just a blood utilization, but a blood management program can really do for the hospital.
Absolutely.
So Becky, just over to you, I want to get your thoughts on some of those challenges. What are some things that the hospitals can do to help manage that?
Well, as Kira mentioned, you know, on the topic of institutional organization and leadership, one of the things they can do is create program goals and drivers. And that's something with working with our members and clients that we can help them organize those program goals and drivers. Also, as far as staff and time constraints, and that's a problem for everyone, but if you divide up the duties of between the multiple patient blood management committee members with respect to their time and some of their constraints, then one person doesn't bear that burden, which for larger organizations, they might have a patient blood management coordinator or director, someone who has the responsibility of the overarching program. But, you know, again, that's an FTE. For smaller organizations, they may not have that. And the work of that committee shouldn't fall on just one single person that has other hats to wear within the organization. There's also the issue that Kara mentioned about lack of awareness or even interest in patient blood management. Physicians are doing so many different things and they're part of so many different committees. You know, how do you identify a person that's really going to engage and help with this program? And my recommendation would be to identify clinical leaders who are passionate about quality and safety. And every organization has a couple of those. And I think the staff are drawn to those physicians. They're generally, you know, easy to work with, have a lot of great ideas and really care about patients. And not that all of them don't, but there's some that you can identify that are more passionate about quality and safety. And tapping those physicians to be part of your program will help you as far as having a champion and a peer for the other physicians to kind of drive your goals.
Right. So I'm hearing share the work.
Yeah.
Define your goals.
Yeah.
And then find those champions who can really energize the rest of the organization.
Yeah. And the other thing was, you know, funding and resources. And that's always going to be a problem. But actually getting buy-in from your C-suite, your CFO, your CNO, your CEO is very important because it's going to drive your funding, whether you need additional staffing, even part-time help, funding for IT. Some organizations have a reinvestment strategy where they invest some of the savings from the program back into the program to actually grow it and add on different additional implementation or strategies around patient blood management. Patient blood management is big and it's complex, but it doesn't have to be complicated. We can start small. As I mentioned before, just looking at inpatient transfusions for red cell units. And then as the program grows and there's that reinvestment, you can add on anemia clinics or you know, maybe point of care testing in the OR if they don't currently have that. So you can continue to grow that program and possibly a reinvestment strategy might help continue to fund that through the savings that you're seeing through patient blood management.
That's some great advice and some good input to make it seem less daunting, right? Mm-hmm. You can start small and really grow and build out the program and add those components that we've talked about over time. So, you know, we're kind of getting to the end of our time. I want to share some thoughts with the audience here around how do they go about setting up the program. So I'm going to start with you, Becky. Who needs to be involved? So you think about from two aspects. I think you've touched on a little bit around the leadership involvement and support. But from the perspective of who do you need support from and then who do you need participation from? Who are those key people to work with?
Well, as I mentioned before, I think, first of all, you need that administrative buy-in. And some of the things that you can do to get that buy-in is, you know, share the evidence-based national guidelines. you know, discuss the financial considerations as far as the return on investment for the program, and, you know, discuss the improved quality care of patients, because that's valuable. And but as far as the other key stakeholders within the organization, you need a patient blood management committee. And part of that committee, you would want, if your organization's large enough, you would hopefully have a patient blood management coordinator, but that could be someone that also functions in another capacity within the organization. But you would need participation from the chief quality officer. You would need a transfusion services physician or the laboratory medical director involved as the chair of that committee. You would need input from the hospitalist or internist, you know, those in-house physicians. You need ICU, hematology, oncology, surgery, anesthesia, support from nursing department, and you also need pharmacy and IT support. And IT support helps with creating dashboards to track your progress with your patient blood management program, and also adding prompts and stops in your EHR system so that you can capture data and help your physicians make decisions based on transfusions.
That's just about everybody in the hospital.
It is. But for smaller facilities, you may not need that many people. If you're a large organization and that uses a lot of blood products, then you're going to need support from anesthesia. They're very involved in that. Pharmacy's very involved in all those practices. The ED, ICU's giving a lot of blood. If you're a smaller organization, you can probably do this with a handful of people. But if you're a large system organization, you're going to need a representative from one of these departments. And it doesn't necessarily have to be physicians. It can be department managers, just someone who has the ability to advocate for their department and drive change within that department.
All right. So, Kara, I'm going to go to you now. Mm-hmm. We've talked about a whole lot of people. We've got to get involved. Mm-hmm. Where do you start? How do you get one of these programs off the ground?
Sure. I think it goes back to securing the executive leadership support by all the steps, you know, Becky mentioned related to the ROI, the financials, patient outcomes, but then the multidisciplinary piece of the committee to help drive it and improve those clinical outcomes. So it's very important that you select the right people that are engaged, that understand the goals of the program, and that want to make that change for the patients at the end of the day, right? That's what it's all about, and that's who it's for. Again, not just the product, but the patient. So I think they would want to start by doing a self-assessment. How much, you know, does your program need to grow? You may already be looking at utilization, but you don't have a robust program that meets, you know, all of those pillars we talked about earlier related to the patient. So they would look at the evidence-based guidelines from AABB and SABM, the two standards, if you will, for patient blood management, and looking at your self-assessment, then figure out where your gaps are. You know, continue with a gap analysis and figure out how to close those gaps. And I think that's, you know, part of how our organization can help from an advisory perspective is, you know, helping close those gaps for your program to make sure that it's best practice.
Well, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I've learned a lot just from talking with you all today and as we were, you know, getting ready for this. Any final thoughts that you want to share that we didn't talk about that you want to pass on to our listeners?
I would just say that, you know, any place you are is a good place to start. And a lot of organizations don't currently have a program, but I don't want them to be intimidated by that. It's great. We can start anywhere you are. You know, we can help with making your program more robust, but, you know, don't be intimidated by the massiveness or the overwhelming feeling of the project. Just one day at a time, get started.
Great. Thanks.
I think I agree with Becky, and I would just say when we look at the pharmacist perspective, this is an area of growth for a lot of pharmacists, right? So we're very patient-centered. We're decentralized on the floors and more clinical than we've ever been. You know, we're no longer the druggist that's trapped in the pharmacy just as in a dispensing mode, but definitely more proactive on the floor, helping make those decisions, you know, before it ever, that drug, that transfusion ever reaches the patient. So I think pharmacists is a great part of the team, well-versed in policies and procedures and protocols, working with IT, obviously the medication experts. So I think they're key to have at the table as well.
Great. Thanks, Kara. Thanks, Becky.
Thanks. Thanks for having us. Thanks for listening today. Please visit us at Candid Conversations on the Source at healthtrustpg.com to hear more Candid Conversations episodes. If you want to talk to us about your lab operations and patient blood management, contact us at solutions@healthtrustpg.com.